places. This is the Southern California Chinese American Oral History Project, jointly sponsored by the UCLA Asian American Study Center and the Chinese Historical Society of Southern California. This is an interview with Herbert Leung taking place on January 14, 1981 at his office. Okay, Mr. Leung, where are your parents from?
Well, actually, my mother was born in San Francisco before the turn of the century. And my father, according to the records, supposed to have been born in the Sacramento area about 1870. It was late 1870. It was 76, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
But evidently, whether that's correct or not, I don't know, because the records show on my birth certificate my father was born in the United States. My mother was born in San Francisco, because she told us about her early experiences before the earthquake and during and the earthquake when they were trying to leave the disaster area.
So do you know anything about your grandparents?
Not myself, because they at an early age, you know, my childhood passed away, so my sister probably would know, my older brother would probably be more so. I think my sister has more of the historical, whatever, pictorials or any documents left that she's able to get a hold of.
What were your parents, so where did your parents live, in San Francisco or Sacramento?
No, it's kind of fuzzy with me, because all I know is that my father came down to Los Angeles. My mother and father came down early years, because my father was, I believe, one of the founders of the city market down here. Because in looking at one of the documents when I was a youngster, I noticed that he was a secretary to the city market in 1910.
Uh-huh.
The market was founded in 1909 by Louis Kwan, you know, Kwang Lui, the late Kwang Lui's father.
Right.
So my father and Kwang Lui's father are very close friends. Because I remember in my early days when we used to visit their house. In fact, maybe, I don't know how if the sisters know about, because every one of our brothers were matched with every one of the sisters would be married one time. So it's one of those things, you know, the families. We never did come to, you know.
What was that? Every one of,
you know, how parents get together, you know. They match me with one of the daughters. They had five, so many daughters. They had so many boys, and you know, each one was supposed to be matched off, but it never came to, you know, reality. But my mother and Louis Guan's wife were very close friends. In fact, my father and his father, their father, you know, very close.
So he came to LA sometime prior to 1909.
Yes, he must have been, because he was in various, I guess he might have been in the truck farming business, because we did own a farm, my father, down there by Alameda in the Torrance, I guess way down there, 200 something street in Alameda. I don't know, I'm not sure where it is, because one of my uncles, let's see, you know Richard Ung? He used to have produce down there. I've forgotten the name of it. I think he's retired now. Richard, one of my cousins.
Mm-hmm.
One of my father's brothers, their offspring.
Mm-hmm.
They had a produce market on the 7th Street market.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a farm out, I guess, out that way.
Uh-huh.
So, all these things are, they're not too clear to me, because I knew we had a farm, because my uncle used to go out there and I guess he used to do some farming, and then sometimes he used to go hunting out there and he'd shoot some squirrels and bring it back and bow yuck, so and all that stuff. But so that's about the extent I know, because I've never been off of the farm.
Uh-huh.
I was a little kid.
Uh-huh.
because I guess they didn't take the little kids out there. My older brother, probably, the oldest brother, or some of the others might have gone out there.
How large was your family?
Oh, there's seven of us.
Seven, uh-huh.
And there's six still alive.
Uh-huh. How many girls and boys?
Three girls, four boys. No, it's two girls and four boys.
Uh-huh. Did your father pass away when you were very young? Or
when I was 5 years old.
When you were five?
I guess he contracted pneumonia after an operation, and in those days, post-operative types of illness, so, you know, especially influenza or something, caught him. That was the cause.
Mm-hmm. So what did your mother do?
My mother was a housewife. You know, in Chinese family, you have seven kids. And then it wasn't until when I was in elementary school, six, my mother tried to learn some English. So she wasn't able to, gain any employment of any skill because of her very limited English. Very limited.
Mm-hmm.
And she worked at jobs, worked in the store, like downtown. I think she worked at one of the jewelry stores, I forgot the name of it, one of these sells watches and all
mm-hmm.
that stuff. She worked there for a while and a few other things. But never anything, of skill because she didn't have any skills.
Mm-hmm. But did she work full time in order to support the family of seven after your father died?
Well, off and on because. Our market business was there for about a few years after my dad passed away, but then there's some things, I guess the way business reversed, because other people running it probably weren't doing the profitable business, so we sold that business.
Mm-hmm.
About a number of years after my father passed. But,
So, after your father passed away, did your brothers and sisters, did you all sort of contribute towards supporting each other and supporting the family? Or?
Well, yes, to some degree, because everybody was were minors at that time,
How old was the
My oldest sister, she left high school. She didn't get to complete high school because she went out to work. She worked. Of course, pre-World War II, what can you gain? What kind of Asian or Chinese woman get outside the field? She got a job waiting on tables on Hollywood. So it was a place where a lot of tips, so naturally
mm-hmm.
this was better than working in Chinatown.
Mm-hmm.
So she was, in that respect, she was able to help. Then, my brother was sent back to China. To study, two oldest brothers.
You study Chinese?
Chinese. And then they left him there for a number of years. And he lost out a lot because nobody sent him any money in ship or fare to come back. And he was there about 4 or 5 years. So therefore, he lost out on his high school education. Next, when he came back, he was ready to go out to work, so he went to work.
Which brother was this?
The oldest.
Oldest brother.
I think these are some of the things which occurrences which happen and they just affect people in the long run.
Okay, so when and where were you born?
I was born in Los Angeles.
And the year?
1922.
Uh-huh. Where were you educated?
In Los Angeles City Schools.
Uh-huh. Can I have the names of the schools?
Oh, 9th Street School.
Uh-huh.
Lafayette Junior.
Uh-huh.
And Jefferson.
Uh-huh.
Then I went to, service. Came out, went to SC, UCLA.
What did you study at SC and UCLA?
Well, I was a pre-med or pre-dental at that time after all. But at that time, there were a multitude of people on getting in. So, like when I was UCLA finishing up my studies, getting my bachelor's, the advisor said, you know, there's, he said, no, I don't know how true it was, he said, there's about 10,000 people applying for the med school at that time after World War II.
At UCLA?
At UC Berkeley. UCLA didn't have a med school back there at that time.
Uh-huh.
So he said, you know what your chances are? I said, yeah, I guess so. I guess I never applied anything here locally, I mean in the California area, so didn't broaden my, you know, the opportunities. But so I went into education after.
At UCLA?
No, I graduated UCLA with a bachelor's in zoology.
Uh-huh.
Then went to SC that summer and then got my teaching credential a year later, by next, the following year in 51, 50 out of UCLA, and went to the education.
Education department, okay. Were there many Chinese studying education at SC at that time?
Not too many. In fact, most of the Chinese were in the sciences, in medical, dental, and engineering, as I look back. Mm. Still, you know, there's a large segment doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Which limits, that's why, you know, I can see the impact upon the Chinese in so political and other areas, which, you know, the Chinese are not fairly still at the lower rungs of the political scene as among the Asians.
Mm-hmm.
Even the newly arrived others, other than the Japanese naturally has a lot of political, you know, clout, they call it,
mm-hmm.
because of their involvement in politics. Of course, they have a larger, you know, they get representation, especially through Hawaii, because 25% of the population is Japanese and only 6% is Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at, see the Filipinos are 10% in Hawaii, or even, you know, a lot of these areas around here, so you can see that as far as visibility, the Chinese lack it here, even Los Angeles City Hall. The Koreans and the Filipinos and the Japanese are very visible. Of course, we do have a few people. I know Chris Sung is up there, whatever. But I'm talking about beyond community input is very limited.
Speaking about visibility, so after you graduated from SC, did you have any problems getting a job?
No. I got a job. I started teaching right away.
Where did you do your teaching?
Well, I went to the south side of town at 118th Street School, and then I came back, and then I was going to, in the second year, I was going to quit and go into medical school, I was actually accepted at the osteopathic school of medicine up here in Laos. They're a medical school now, Irvine.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess the first baby came and I went back to teaching the second year. And went from, and then I didn't go back to that school because I called up and said I was going to quit teaching. And the baby came. Anyway, and I moved around, kind of floundered about half a year, and then finally got assignment over at another school, Holmes Avenue. I stayed there about 5 years, then went to Ivanhoe, 1959, for about 4 or 5 years. I left that one on a sabbatical, and went into counseling for about 7 years. I went to a director of a project for 1 year in 1970, I think, or 71. They came into this office in 72.
Okay, but do you feel in general there was any discrimination against hiring Chinese in the education field?
Probably in promotion, but it's very subtle, you know. You don't know about it until, you know, you find out. Let's say, for example, I was, you know, at several of the schools I was, where the schools are small in enrollment, where they only have one administrator, a principal, and usually the principal will designate one teacher as being the acting assistant principal, you know, whatever they call it, vice principal then. So one school, the first school I was at for 5 years, I was in there for 2 years, and went to the second school up here at Ivanhoe by Silver Lake for 5 years. I was there for 2 years as acting principal. When the principal leaves, you know, somebody had to be in authority. Mm-hmm. So I was going to take the assistant principal test back in 1963. And the principal wrote me a letter. She said, like, she didn't even show it to me. In those days, you know, everything was under the table. They didn't have lot, right now it's more open. You know, yeah. They say, if you want to make it, if you like to look at it, you know, they send you a copy a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
But so the following year, I was, the principal said, well, I'll give somebody else a chance to be acting principal, give them an opportunity to get this experience in their background. So I said, okay. So see, this woman went in there and she looked at, I guess she, the principal went to Dallas or somewhere for a conference with her husband, so mm-hmm. she was in there for 2 days. She looked through the file and saw my letter. And she said, gee, it's terrible what she wrote. She said, first thing she wrote, Mr. Leung is a nice Chinese gentleman. You know, the thing is, when you start using ethnic background on people, and then when people read your, when you take an exam, there's a committee of seven people read your application, plus all your references. And then you can read a letter like that. You know, people at that time, in 63, we didn't have this Watts thing, and everything began to be more ethnic conscious. They read it, you know, when the person said, you know, China, he's not an American, you know, something, you know, this is in the mind of a lot of people, say, you know, he's a, not an American, he's a Chinese, or he's a, you know, whatever ethnic group you want to
right.
be. Right. And I think she should have left it that way, would, by putting this kind of designation, because even this person who was read the thing, she thought it wasn't good. She's a Caucasian. She says, I don't think people would take this very kindly. She's a very good friend of mine. She used to teach in the next room to me. She went in there. She were, you know, we used to talk a lot, so she,
mm-hmm.
so she made me privy to it. But I think subtle, you know, a lot of times, like the, after I took the test, the principal said to me, it's good to take the test for experience. She said, I think it's better for you to take, you know, it's, like, you know, have you take the test. In other words, she wasn't pushing me. She wants you to experience it. And I know for a fact that she, some of the people that she pushed, you know, I mean, were teaching under her. One I know of specifically took the test, made it the first time. In other words, it's what you write. You know, I write for a lot of people, for, you know, a lot of people use me for a reference to take an exam, administrative promotion exam. It's what you write that does the job. I'll look at this list right here because I went to see one of the superintendents. I push, see, like, you know Sue Mui Kwan?
No, I don't.
She's assistant principal. You know Doris Wong?
Yes.
She's assistant principal now.
Uh-huh.
I made her go take the test, but I recommended her. She made it. See, 400 people took the test, so 80 made, so she's pretty good.
Uh-huh.
When you think of 400 people taking it, it's not 400 anybody. It's usually the top teachers take it, or teachers or whatever they are,
mm-hmm.
to take a test for assistant principal. So you're competing with what they call the cream of the crop. Not 20,000 teachers and anybody takes it. So usually you don't take a test unless somebody really pushes you. Okay, so I recommend
by this. Pushes you, you mean
recommends you. You know, when
right.
somebody says, I'm going to use your name for reference, you get a letter from it, and it says so-and-so is what's called. You know, they give you four forms to fill out all the checks on the different areas, and you a lot of places for you to write, and then you can write more of yourself on a piece of paper, you know,
mm-hmm.
get a letterhead or a stationery, write it up. See, that's what you do. See, this whole system, you know, any system, or any kind of promotional job you, a person competes for, it's, like they say, it's not what you know, it's who you know. So I pushed a lot of people. There's people who are two people that I have recommended. One of the recommendees, you know, you get
mm-hmm.
about five or six people.
Mm-hmm.
If I were no good, you know, in other words, you read my name right away, you said, gee, this, we don't have any reputation that right. You know, you're going to lose 10 points if I put a letter in there. So I know for a fact that if two people are in there as assistant principals in the school district,
mm-hmm.
I recommend it, so I've done something for them. I mean, mm-hmm. it wasn't negative.
Mm-hmm.
See?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's the other four letters that were so good that mine couldn't pull it down enough. But anyway, so I'm saying that it's what you do for the people. See? And I think a lot of these are subtle. You know, people don't have to tell you, I'm not going to recommend it. They're going to just say, well, I'm just going to not write for them.
Mm.
See, another thing is, I was pretty upset about it, so I went up and took an evaluation. So you go up there and make an appointment with personnel. After that, you didn't make the test. So.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the guy had my folder. They don't, in those days, 1963, they didn't let you look at things. But they have the folder. You see the forms, and you know the forms, and the forms have columns. This is,
yeah.
The first column on the left is...
Superior,
no,
probably.
The right, the on this side, is the right side, the form is so upside down, it's, you know, you see it. All the checks must be outstanding. The next
yeah.
one is strong. Next
yeah.
one is average. Next one is, it's either, you know, I don't know how they word it, but it's something. And the other one is no opportunity to observe or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's all the things, you know, there's about 50 things, you know,
mm-hmm.
your dress, your voice, your quality of teaching, your communication, written communication, oral communication, voice, and
mm-hmm.
everything else. So I was looking, and here I saw my principal's name on there, signature. I saw a couple of checks not in the first column, the way in the front. If the person is not checked all the way on the right side, you lose a point or two.
Yeah.
And you average seven people, you know, even a hundredth of a point or a tenth of a point on your average and drop you right off.
Yeah.
So therefore, it's like I've talked to other people. I've been on committees up there before, you know, doing evaluation and oral committees, you know, not, you know, for different promotional events. We look at these things. If you don't grade the person way on the right side, they're not going to get it.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't write for them, and everybody else get written up, and you read those comments, it gives, you know, say somebody says to you, give them 100 points
mm-hmm.
for you know, anything that's outstanding. Okay, so you start going backwards. Okay, you say, well, he got two checks on the second column, so all the way to the first, you say, I'll take off so many points, okay? So you say, well, I'll take off 5 points, 95. You say, well, this person didn't have anything written about me, you know, comments, so I'll take another 5 points, 90. And a few other things, you know, then there's four sheets of paper. So you look at each paper, it doesn't have writing, so you say, I'll take off a few, get down to 85. So yeah, I mean, it works very well.
Mm-hmm.
Against the person, if you know, these subtle things that you don't. Like one principal told me, says, they know that everybody I write for are the good people. The ones I don't write for, just check off. You know, they know. Like if I'm a person who does evaluate, I would look at it and say, well, the principal doesn't say anything, or the person, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I, you know, so there are, yeah, there are a lot of subtle things.
So you went to the personnel.
No, I took you always,
oh,
you
the
always,
evaluation
you
the, and then
you always can if you want to. You don't have to, but it gives you opportunity to at least somebody sitting on the other side tell you, well, says, well, somebody wrote on only one person of the seven said, I think Mr. Leo will make an outstanding this. But still, you need all of them.
Did you ever think or consider that it was a form of discrimination at the time?
No. You know, I was just upset that the principal didn't check me off. And I said, well, but then I found out later as I got more experience, you know, as a teacher that didn't go off, you know, since I've been in this job, which is an administrative job, which unless people understand what this is, our position is we have more, since we were direct representative to the Board of Education. See, there's people like the superintendent, the minor staff down by the chancellor of the school and all the people down there. They report directly to him. But
mm-hmm.
then there's advisory, the Board of Education, which the chancellor, they make all the policy. Well, we are directly under, even though I'm an employee of the district and I'm a teacher, you know, I have a certificate, a credential, I can be an administrator or anything. I don't work with them. The superintendent doesn't control us. We work with the board. We advise the board. We go to schools, all the we go to superintendents,
mm-hmm.
the principals, everything, if there's any problems.
Mm-hmm.
We try to alleviate problems. We go anytime, we have appointments. A school principal can't go to the superintendent, like Dr. Johnson, or we can go to, like this morning I was with one of the superintendents. So yesterday I was talking about things, trying to get. See, this list here, I try to get, see, it's down, only down to about number 25.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to get some of these Asian women moved. She speaks Spanish, Chinese, Cantonese.
Uh-huh.
See, this is an asset. Mm-hmm. And he didn't know it. The superintendent who does the assignment, he's out. So I saw him write down here Cantonese and Spanish. I said, because her Spanish, her Chinese is good. Okay, she can speak that. But I just do, because being Chinese, you want to be able to emphasize the fact that she speaks Spanish at the professional level. She has a state certificate of competency, which means you speak like a native Spaniard. So you put that down. So therefore, the rule says you can only pick the top five. What's the number one? Number 25 is number one. Say to number 30. The rule says you can only take from them. But in special instances where a school needs a person to speak two languages, they just jump over all these things. If that's the first one in line. Of course, if there's somebody here to do it, then you go to that one first, and this one would be second. So this way, you know, we have this kind of, if I had gone up there, the superintendent would have known it. And they make some assignments in the spring, and this list expires July 8, 1981. There's mm-hmm. nothing reached down to her.
Mm-hmm.
There's not that many people going to leave the district.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we get her signed, we've done that. And not only it's a woman, it's an Asian. That's
mm-hmm.
what we're concerned about.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a lot of infighting. You know, the minorities fighting to get all of it. So, you know, the other minorities, you know, the larger minorities,
mm-hmm.
the two large minorities. I'm talking about the Asians being one group because we have to form a group because we're not large enough as individual ethnic identities to combat the other two large minorities. They want everything.
What are the other two large minorities?
What the two large minorities are in Los Angeles, other than Asians?
I could take a good guess.
Okay.
Okay.
You know, you want those stamps back?
Or else I need a rep.
Oh yeah, she went. She'll be back about. She went to pick up something. She'll be back. Well, so when you sit in, and I'm aware of these other people go to the superintendent and say, look, there's only 10% of ours, you know, like, say Hispanics, for example, got 40-50% of the kids. So they said, we should have this many administrators, but we don't have this many, 10%. But we want 40, so you got. We want to see right, they always say right now, yesterday, the same as the other group. Okay, so, you know, we have a difficult time.
Mm-hmm.
But I use, that's why I go out and search out the different ethnic groups, the different people, the Asians who are available on this list, and find out what kind of background, expertise they have, and try to sell those to the superintendent. Because the list is down here, it's certainly not going to go over there. By the special board rule that says you can appoint anybody, jump over the top five for special circumstances. So I know she has special circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it permeates our whole system and our whole society, you know, this quota bit. I mean, they say goals, but I say quota. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, they can't, you know, it's just another guise for quotas.
When was this Asian American Commission started?
I've been here since 72, well, so about 2 years before that, 1970, I think.
So that's fairly recent.
10 years. Well, yeah. Watts Riot, there weren't too many other things going on. I think the Black Commission came, a year before that, Mexican American Commission, a year before that. So all the commissions been in about 12 years. Attend this commission, 70 to 80. American Indian Commission came about 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So,
the Asian American Commission deals with problems and other things dealing with business, dealing with bilingual schools or dealing with
anything that affects the education of Asian American students.
Uh-huh.
So that's a broad, you know, when you say a lot of things, the health, welfare or other thing, it could be direct education curriculum, or it could be staffing, could be, parents could have concerns, students have concerns, a lot of times community people have concerns, but it has to be, related, because we don't have the energy, the personnel to take on all the, problems,
mm-hmm.
which we wish we could. But we do refer, you know, a lot of times families have problems, and we can help out, but we have some resources, you know, directory that we refer them to. Some people call us with other problems other than school. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let me get back to my questionnaire here. Okay, you've given me the names of your schools, and general idea of your jobs. Where have you lived in Los Angeles?
Oh, I lived mainly in down on 9th and San Pedro Street until after World War II, and I lived in that area all my life. And then after I got married, I moved, you know, to the south part of town for about a year, and then I moved back into another year back in the family house, because nobody was living there, so my brother, so my wife and I lived there for about a year. Then we bought a house.
Where was the family house?
On Town Avenue, 9th and Town. Uh-huh. That's two blocks from San Pedro on 9th Street, right? Uh-huh. About a block from 9th Street School.
Uh-huh.
Then we moved to Crenshaw and lived there for, you know, about 12 years. Then we moved to Monterey Park.
Mm-hmm.
12 years ago.
And you're still out in Monterey Park now? Uh-huh.
Chinatown.
Right. Second Chinatown. Okay. What languages were spoken at home when you were young?
My mother spoke nothing but Cantonese or Toisan, because she couldn't speak any English, or very limited. Then about 10 years after my dad passed away, before that, she started to try to learn English. And she tried to encourage us to speak English to her. So,